Welcome back, everyone. This is Judging Nerd Culture with Ollie
and Coop.
And today, you're going to listen to me talk for about an hour about a game I really love.
Oh, don't worry. I'm going to make absolutely sure to get in there. About a games you really love, right?
Indeed. I couldn't decide what to really do with this, so I decided instead of talking about one game, because that could take a couple hours, I was going to talk about all three in a very broad way, which only take about an hour.
There is a science to this, listeners. And the science is that Mass Effect takes a long time to play.
It does.
Especially if two people have to take a long time to play it. That's, what, 100 handsome fella hours?
At least.
Yeah.
Mass Effect, the trilogy in general, is probably, aside from maybe Warframe, the one franchise I've put in the most amount of hours.
Oh, yeah.
I have gotten every ending in every game.
Yeah. The qualifications are all here among 50% of the hosts of this podcast. I have seen plenty of Mass Effect over people's shoulders over the course of my life, and that is about it. So we're doing another one of our Let Me Tell You About It series, which is not what it was called originally, but is something that's going to come up from time to time when we want to talk about the long video games we like to play, and when we need to make two episodes quickly because we ran out of buffer room. There's a little peek behind the curtain for you. Last time it was Assassin's Creed Odyssey. That was Ollie's bag, and I told him about Stardew Valley. And so this week, Ollie's going to take us on a mighty fine tour through Mass Effect, and then we don't usually do what next episode is, but next week is Binding of Isaac, which has a lot of shit to talk about, despite only being one game. So, like, it's gonna be a good time.
Hell yeah. I'm excited to learn a little more about Binding of Isaac. I've heard a lot of things, and I've seen the character in Smash, so it should be fun to see.
I don't... No, 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 no. No,
that's
no,
not
no,
him?
No, no, no,
there's
no,
an
no.
Isaac in the
no,
game.
No, certainly... Oh, buddy. You... Oh, this is... That's hilarious. No, no. This is an extremely different situation. Those games are also going to have to be a Let Me Tell You About It. Golden Sun takes way too long to play, but that's that Isaac. This is a different guy. In any case, this week Mass Effect, next week Binding of Isaac, which are both things that it's impossible to be like, hey, just play this real quick. Like, they're hard recommends. So,
Yeah,
take me away.
I sure will. Broadest overview possible. Mass Effect is a Odyssey in space split into three acts. One of which is bad guys come in, bad guys hang around, bad guys leave, and you're a badass the entire time.
Is one act per game, that's what you're saying, right?
Okay, that's what I'm referring to. And I'm going to obviously start off with Mass Effect 1, and I'm going to have, you know, no hinting or poking. Mass Effect 1 is my favorite of the franchise. It's clunkety when it comes to any of the actual gameplay, because a lot of the mechanics of it work on basically a D&D engine to whether it actually does a hit or how much damage it does, and it's weird, because they turned that into a shooter.
Yeah, that's like, you know, Morrowind, Elder Scrolls Morrowind, did similar things. They were like partway between tabletop RPG mechanics and just, like, shooter mechanics. But this is a much more explicitly, like, third person over the shoulder, right? It looks like a regular-ass shooter would look, and the feel in your hands is probably about the same, I imagine, but...
Yeah, there are some mechanical things that make number one very unique to the entire franchise. A lot to do with the actual, like I said, shooting of everything, the actual gameplay. Unlike in 2, 3, and even Andromeda, which I'm not going to talk about...
That'll get its own someday.
Yeah, I like Andromeda. No one else does, and I'm okay with it.
I have no ideas one way or another. Like, all of this is extremely abstract to me, but from what I've seen, you may be the only one in the whole world.
Is it ugly? Yes, it is. Do I still like it? Yes, I do.
Yeah, a lot of the complaints are aesthetic, and, you know, that can go either way for me, but
anyways, these ones. I want to talk about the gameplay first, since... Weirdly enough, that'll be the quickest thing to hit off. With number one...
Real quick. This is, like, kind of Star Wars looking, right?
Yeah.
You're in space, you go to planets, you have a ship, there are humanoids, but of different kinds of species from different planets. Yeah. And
It's definitely kind of Star Wars-y, but, you know, everything looks newer. In Star Wars, everything looks old and gross.
Sure. It's, so, like, the shininess of a Star Trek.
Yes.
The, like, it seems a little more kind of gritty and action-y, yes, though.
The aliens are from Star Wars, the gear is from Star Trek.
Are they as racist as the aliens from Star Wars?
Ashley is.
Okay, sounds good. Well, we'll get there.
We'll get there. So, anyways, with the gameplay, in number one of the main differences is that there aren't ammo. There aren't any ammo clips or whatever. They add that in number two and threes to make it more like a traditional shooter, which did seem to make it more popular. Definitely brought in a lot more players and people to the game. But,
like, you still reload, right?
Yeah,
it's just you're bottomless otherwise.
Yeah. The way it works, number one, is that everything's a little more future tech. So instead, you just have a gun that shoots until it overheats, and then it cools down.
Okay.
You literally have a cooldown on your attack.
I could see, like, shooter people despising that.
Yes.
Even though that's effectively what reloading is, but there's just a little more science to it, a little more strategy to it.
There's also more control of the clip.
Yeah.
You can reload whenever you want at any time. So with this version, with the cooldown thing, it will get hotter as you shoot, and the closer it gets to overheating, the harder it is, the slower it cools down.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have the gun and you're shooting a few times, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, it'll cool down very quickly.
And that's every weapon?
Most of them.
Uh-huh.
There are some weapons that work a little, the cooldown for each weapon is a little different for each type, like a pistol, cooldowns pretty quickly, sniper, not so much, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Shotgun.
Right.
Depends. But yeah. The cooldown is typically, generically, works as the hotter it gets, the slower the cooldown will go. So if you can shoot a few shots and let it cool down, that's more effective for continuing to get shots off.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you need to fire fast, and then it'll overheat, and then it takes more time than you would like for it to cool down. And there's less granular control of when your gun is full and when you can shoot it.
Yeah.
And it leads you to, oh shit, I have to move. I have to get out of here.
Yeah, that seems like much more to think about than what everybody has already been trained to know, which is, I shoot and now I'm not shooting anymore. That means I need to hit the reload button. Or if you're playing a good game, it means you don't need to hit the reload button. It'll just do it. But in any case, you know, that kind of thing.
I personally took to, this thing's about to overheat, switch to my next gun, and then you're good.
Yep.
But along with that, which is a very unique mechanic to number one, and did make it a little bit of a nuisance at the very beginning, eventually I got over it, eventually I figured out what to do, how to make that work for me. I also, it takes a moment to really, like, the controls for this, the controls for just the running around, looking and shooting, are clunkety.
Mm-hmm.
There's no direct cover button that really works like a charm. You can hide behind stuff sometimes. You can figure out your way to do it. But in number two and three, there's more. Press a button, you slide right behind it.
Sure. Yeah. The actual, like, lock-in cover system, which people, you know, some people dislike, some people like, but I feel like if you are expecting people to take cover, it's better to give them mechanics that let them take cover.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And while I think the cover-based systems and anything are usually kind of like, meh, it really depends on how you use it. Like, a good cover-based system can still be real good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't make it slow or tedious. It doesn't have to, at least. Unlike, you know, I don't know, Gears of War 2 and 3 or
sure.
Weird.
Sure. Yeah, and in those, your guy looks like he could only run, you know, 1 mile per hour.
Exactly.
Are we into, like, spoilers? Not really. Are we into, like, psychic powers and stuff yet in number one?
Yes, we are.
Cool.
Which is, you don't have to be, but why?
Like, if you're firing up a shooter that's like, hey, we have all of this other stuff that's not in other shooters, and you're like, no thanks, just an SMG for me. Like, that just seems like a real wasted opportunity.
It super is. But yeah, in number one, it establishes something, the biotics and the character classifications, basically, are established in number one and continued on from one to three, which is kind of necessary, since you can transfer over your character from one to two to three, and if their class no longer exists, that would be a fucking bummer.
Right, exactly.
So,
or if a new class comes into play in a later game, it's like, too late, motherfucker. Yeah, that'd be a real bummer too.
Basically. And the way these classes work is basically there's three primary classes, soldier, engineer, and biotic.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's in-betweens where you can be slightly soldier and slightly biotic, slightly soldier and engineer, slightly engineer and biotic,
mm-hmm.
slightly biotic, blah, blah, blah.
So forth. There's three mains, the primary, secondary colors, right?
Yeah, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm most familiar with the Vanguard class,
mm-hmm.
which is soldier and biotic.
Sure.
And everything I say will be based on that classification. So anyone who actually knows this game real well knows that the playstyle I committed to was I'm going to jump in the middle, blow everything up, and hope I didn't die.
Sure, sure. Right. Makes sense. But you go in also with party members, which yes. I know is like one of the biggest deals about these games, just from osmosis. Like everybody's like, that's the good part.
It is indeed.
Not that other parts aren't good, but that's the best part.
Oh, for sure. I'm going to talk about them in just a second sure. because they're... It's impressive, even in number one, the amount of control that you have over them in the battlefield. Because mm-hmm. you can point at a character, tell them, kill this guy, and then just leave, and mm-hmm. they'll take care of it.
Yeah, the one thing that really sucks about games where you have allies is if, you know, the AI's just not there. Like, that really needs to be
yeah.
present if you are relying on these people. And, like, my supposition is, because you're picking a class and getting specific, you know, you would then round out your team with people who can do stuff you can't.
Exactly. Okay. I always have an yeah. engineer on the team because I can't fuck mm-hmm. with robots.
Which, that's like RPGs 101, but that's happening in a more action-y game is interesting.
Yeah. I'm going to get to that into the characters,
mm-hmm.
but I just want to mention real quick that the biotic system, the leveling up system in this,
mm-hmm.
Well, not the biotic specifically, but the leveling system... where you acquire skill points and you can unlock different powers. For me, there are mostly biotics and weapon masteries, which is what you get from the soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very RPG-based. You go around, you shoot things, you get experience from it.
Sure.
And then you can pick your new powers and mash them together. And I'm not going to lie, they're all 1, 2, and 3 have basically similar systems. With 2 and 3 expanding to having branching paths, but they're not that much different.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually just a variation on the type of power, usually between focusing on power versus reload speed.
Right.
That sort of idea. And that's pretty generic across all powers and all classes. with 1, there was less branching and less specialization, really, mm-hmm. in that. But it definitely was the most RPG element of this game was just how, just the leveling up system in general, just the going around and looting people was very, I had played this part of the game before, except I'm pretty sure I had a sword once.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, that's the part of the game that really shifts in number 2 and 3, while you still get the branching leveling up and the different powers, the more loot and find armor and acquire different weapons in, mm-hmm. in that manner, at least that kind of stops being a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in number 2, it's you have a very limited set of potential weapons, and it's more of a hey, try modding your one weapon and seeing if you can make it more
sure.
interesting.
Sure, sure, sure.
And number 3, you do have more variety, but it's not as ooh, I just killed the guy. I'm going to see what he had on him. And more, I'm going to have enough gold now to go to the store and buy the next one I want.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm going to, like, the finding treasure in places sounds like, I mean, has the potential to be more interesting to me as well than just, like, you know, you go back to base and pick your loadout. But if you are an actual, like, military person... It makes sense in character. They'd be like, no, you're going to use the stuff that we know it works. Okay.
Fair enough. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And there's also, especially number 1, a little more variation in, armor and weapons in general.
Sure.
With the armor stuff, there's, you know, heavy, medium, light. And in the subsequent titles, that kind of stops being a thing and everyone just kind of has their armor.
Right.
And, in number 1, the reason that those were different is because they would give you different speeds or different biotic ability mm-hmm. or biotic recharge speeds and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was...
I mean, I'm assuming that it's like, you know, if you wear heavy armor, you're less good at the psychic powers because the wizard has to wear light armor. Like, if that's their roots, you
basically.
Know?
Unless you're half wizard, half soldier.
Right. Then you and can... then put on some medium, I imagine. Is it like, you know, a suit of armor is one item, or do you have to be like, the red boots, and then the... Because that once you get granular with body equipment, I'd stop giving a shit so hard. Like,
No, that's definitely just one suit for the body. In Andromeda, that changes a little bit, and you can just kind of mix-match armor pieces to make them look cool.
Yeah.
But who cares?
Or to make them look, like, fucking terrible, I bet. That's where a lot of that tends to fall down for me. Unless all of the pieces of equipment are intrinsically interesting, I'm just like, why? I don't care enough to be in the menu for this. Before we, like, jump way too far into it, and, you know, it's going to be character time real soon.
Yeah.
Give me examples of some psychic powers. Like you know, people picturing this can be like, you know, pistols... SMG, rocket launcher, sniper rifle, stuff like that is in other games, but like this, some of the particulars here.
Okay, so the powers for the engineer and the biotic are unique and in their visualization.
Mm-hmm.
Anything biotic always has this blue glow to it.
Sure.
And for engineers, it's basically you have a utility belt, except it's a holographic gauntlet that shows up on your arm, which is really rad.
Yeah. I'm into it.
And a lot of times the thing will glow, the holographic arm will glow, and something will rotate, and then a small missile will shoot out or something.
Okay.
A little shock will blow up something. You know, it's less...
Like Batman shit?
Basically. More like this thing on your arm is a computer, and you're using it to hack in the middle of a fight.
Okay, neat.
So things are exploding, shields are being drained, electricity
okay.
Yeah.
That's like support stuff.
Yeah.
Seems like a thing you want your party members to do, rather than for you to do to some computer motherfuckers.
Yep. It is real useful, because there is a lot of synthetic enemies in this, because that's one of the main motifs in the Mass Effect games, is creating artificial intelligence and letting it do things or not. And then, they might have been bad, but also, humans and biotic life is just as fucking dumb and bad at sustaining itself and so on and so forth. that's the general idea behind the engineer powers. And aside from the gauntlet, most of them are kind of lackluster in their appearance. They do get a little cooler later on, as some of them in the later games that you get flamethrower abilities and other things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The biotics, again, it's... Everything starts to glow blue. You make sort of like an invisible woman from the old 2000s.
Okay. Yeah.
Fantastic Four movie where there's like a weird misshapenness to the light around a person. It sort of looks like that, and then just everything kind of glows blue. Mm-hmm. And you do stuff with that. Usually making an energy ball, throwing it.
Right.
Making an energy spear and throwing it.
Mm-hmm.
Making armor for yourself and just... having it on. It's a lot less spectacular visually in the first game than the rest of them, just like with the engineer stuff, which I believe is just, you know,
sure,
they got better at graphics and they're like, we can do more now.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, even in the first game, like, my gun's cooling off, but I'm not alone. I can then shoot some more things, right?
Yeah, exactly. Makes sense. That was always an essential part of it. It's just, I have my weapon wheel, because you can press a button and you can... basically, it's stop time, select your weapon, and swap them.
Such an important innovation.
And you can do the same thing with... And on that same wheel, you also have your squad mates and their weapons and your abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look at someone, aim, stop, pick your ability, and then use it.
Yeah.
There's also quick triggers, so you can set them to a specific button and go and use them on the fly. Which, again, also useful for not having to slow down the game pace constantly.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime I would run out of, you know, fire time and starting to cooling down, shoot off a couple biotic shots. A lot of the powers revolved around throwing people around the room.
Mm-hmm.
So you would also crowd control through that. And that's pretty effective.
Yeah.
That's top to bottom how you play Mass Effect. And I'm not going to talk about it again, because that's the same
gameplay in number 2
and 3. I wouldn't have taken so long otherwise.
That's part of what I was curious about, is like how much would change. But if it's not a lot, that's for the best. Because again, you are bringing your same character all the way through, which is like really cool. I like that as a concept.
Mm-hmm. The only real differences in number 2 and 3 are the looting systems. The fact that the leveling up tree is a little smaller, but the few skills that there are has a little more variation in them. And they usually are a little less clunky. Like, the aiming guidance systems are a little better. There's more types of weapons. Like, in number 2 and 3, they introduce heavy weapons, like grenade launchers and things like that. Better cover system. And a designated punch melee attack.
Okay, yeah.
Which I believe is number 2 and 3. And yeah, that's all. That's everything about Mass Effect's combat that I can really muster up the desire to talk about. Everything else is pretty basic.
Well, alrighty.
In Mass Effect 1, the general story is after you go to a human colony, since the humans have only recently joined the Galactic Federation nonsense, whatever you want to call it,
right?
Space Force. Maybe not.
They've joined the Star Trek.
They've joined the Star
Company.
Exactly. But just recently after joining the Star Trek, the humans are trying to do things. They're trying to be more accepted, because currently people are like, these fucking people. They've been here, what, 2 weeks?
Oh, sure, yeah. They're just babies.
Yeah. And the humans are like, guys, we only live 100 fucking years at best.
Right.
And they're just trying to get some political power or any power and, you know, be seen as equals and so on and so forth. But they're also dicks. Because, you know, go figure. Everyone's bad.
Right.
That's the general idea. And you start off after having made your character and picked their backstories and whatever else you want to do.
But it's always someone Shepherd.
Someone Shepherd. Mm-hmm. And
Dick Suck 69 Shepherd in the house.
I don't think you can do that in the later titles once that there's multiplayer.
They take the numbers out?
Probably.
Oh, okay. Oh, they take the Dick Suck out. That's why.
Probably the Dick.
Dick Shepherd could just be a name.
Like, that is definitely a name.
Yeah. That's Richard Erasure. but, oh well.
Man, you start off with this fun little, you know, backstory of your character. They sort of narrate it and talk to someone who's a clear friend, and it establishes the mission early on. You're trying to have a friendly diplomatic mission with a Turian Spectre, I believe. Name of this fella, Siren. And he's not bad at all.
Turian is like a raptor. Stick bug sort. Nope. Okay. Got it.
They're raptor.
Oh, people. Like Turok.
Yeah.
Yeah. Raptorian.
Raptorian.
Nailed it.
Perfect. And the idea is just you're going to meet this character who is impressive and has a lot of leeway with the console, you know, the government structure in the space world.
Is that your job? Are you like a diplomat?
You're a high-ranking military man who's been chosen for, like, hey, we might have a chance to get someone to be part of the space military. Not our space military, but the UN space military, and we might want it to be you. Because you're cool and people don't hate you.
Okay, so, like, right away, you know, is it like a, hey, player, you're so handsome and great, why don't you go do this? Like, sometimes I feel like these kinds of games get really into the, like, everybody loves you a whole lot.
It's based on what your backstory you choose.
Okay.
In the creation. For me, it was, you came back from a war that was a sabotage, and your entire people were murdered in a cave, but you survived after killing everyone else.
So you have some ownership in, like, why you're famous. That's important, I think.
Yeah. And there's a few other ones which are also just kind of like, hey, good job. You didn't die.
Yeah.
Here, let's see if you can do some more responsible things.
And it's kind of a baller move to be like, here's the thing that happened in your past that is not interesting enough for us to show in this game compared to what all you're about to do. You know, that's good. That's tone setting. It's like, yeah, this just happened, but don't worry, we're getting to the good part. I'm okay with that.
So yeah, you go on this mission to, you know, do whatever, and as you're about to, you get a distress beacon from an Earth colony, the one you're about to hang out around, and you drop down and decide, all right, let's figure shit out. Let's do what we can. And immediately everything goes south. There are weird blue zombies and shit, and no one really knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm. These are not blue zombies as in zombies of the blue people.
No, they're things
that are not supposed to be blue.
Yes, okay. They're definitely humanoid, human things that were turned into cybernetic zombies.
Okay.
And they're called husks, and they're a consistent enemy throughout the series.
Mm-hmm.
But most in number 1 and 3, as far as I remember. you go through this city, through this colony, and you have your couple of squad mates, one of which never shows up again. I think he dies in this one. He barely even had a name. Jenkins.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't matter.
That's such a great name of a sci-fi character who dies. Like, every game's got to have a Jenkins. That's just right.
But yeah, you're hanging out in this town with Jenkins and Alenko. Kaiden Alenko. Mm-hmm. He's cool. He's a biotic guy.
Okay.
While you're on town, in this town, you also meet the other character, Ashley Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And these two are relevant later on.
Yeah, and Ashley's the racist one?
Moderately.
Okay.
She's new to space,
mm-hmm,
and meeting a bunch of aliens who don't like her.
Oh,
made
okay.
her not like them.
Okay, she herself is racist. When I was talking about Star Wars earlier, I was like, oh, you know, like the big nose money stealing character archetype that keeps showing up in those fucking movies. This is the reverse.
This is a little different, yeah. Mm-hmm. This is, oh god, I don't want to talk to this weird lizard man.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'd rather just hang out with humans, please.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right, lady.
I mean, you know, there's like a, like, human v. human racism is just aesthetic qualities and cultural things. But when you're like, what is that? You know, if she's being outspoken and a bastard about it, that's not okay. But like, if you're like, hey boss, I'm gonna, you take the lead on this one.
Yeah, it definitely cools down as the series progresses.
Right, okay, yeah.
But at number one, she is kind of weirdly mm-hmm. racist mm-hmm. towards the alien people.
Now, I'm not gonna go ahead, I would say that's kind of realistic. It probably is. I'm not going to say it's super realistic, because real humans would just want to go and fuck the lizard people immediately, judging by the state of the internet these days.
You're not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You team up with her after you find out that this place has been ransacked and there's some sort of giant enemy ship, like massive motherfucking enemy ship invading, and you try and meet up with Saren and... Saren? Yeah, that's what his name was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with Saren, and figure out what's going on. And you get the feeling, after doing a quick, you know, little sneaky moment, you realize he's the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Whoop-diddy-fucking-do.
We've been set up.
Yeah. And he escapes. You guys survive. You move on to the best part of the game, which is where you get to the Citadel, which is the hub. And this is the thing that makes number one my favorite, is that in number two and three, there's plenty of time to, you know, walk around space station and
mm-hmm.
talk to people and whatever. But none of them feel as, wow, what is this place? How do I,
sure.
like, figure out where the people are that I need to talk to? Who can be my benefactor here and there? Mm-hmm. Where can I get a leg up?
Because it's not your house, you know, like it is in the later games, right? You get your own spaceship in...
Yeah, well, you get your own spaceship in this as well.
Okay.
You just don't... It's just not as much of a central hub
right.
as in the other two games. And in this one, the Citadel plays a much more key role.
Mm-hmm.
You hang out in it a lot and do a lot of political nonsense. And one of my favorite things is, if you just walk around, you eventually can find the office of Blue Oracle Lady. And mm-hmm. she's just like, hey, bad things are going to happen to you. And you can be like, all right, cool. Aren't you also a hooker?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I am. And then you could have sex.
Interesting.
For no real reason.
That's one of your favorite things, huh?
It was unexpected, and they did the Titanic scene, except in a blue orb.
Okay, well, that changes everything. I Now I understand perfectly. What? Okay, a blue orb? You get on a blue orb? It's like
she just hangs out.
Are you the king of the world? But the blue orb is just a very small world?
It's just like her bed is a weird orb.
Oh, okay.
Just get in there.
Okay. Oh, that Titanic scene. Yes. I thought of, like, the one Titanic scene.
No.
You're talking about, you paint her like an Earth girl.
Exactly.
Okay, understood.
And is that dumb? Yes, but it made me laugh.
Yeah,
And it wasn't a thing I expected either. Like, it wasn't...
Okay, if there's gonna be sex scenes in video games, I'd rather it be completely out of nowhere than, like, actually, like, some sort of emotional thing they try to get me to care about, because I'm like, this still doesn't look like a person. You know, I'm not.
Well, that's too bad, because that's the majority of this game.
Oh, sure, right. Yeah, there's a lot going on. Not necessarily is what kept me away, you know, that's not, like, doesn't put me off, but it's also not, like, I gotta get in there. I gotta watch these action figures, fuck, you know?
Well, you're not gonna get to it, number one, it fades to black.
Thank God, that's fine, that's where it should fade.
And number two...
Some things are best left unshown.
In number two and three, they show some tasteful sides.
Okay. Silhouettes?
I don't know, just, like, naked hip.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Some real safe for TV angles.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing.
But you wander around and get into city encounters, and that sounds like a pretty good time.
Yeah, and you meet a lot more so than in number two and three. You meet the different races around the around the Citadel. A lot of them aren't even races that you can have on your team. They're just people.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some that teach you about the weird space religion that exists and mm-hmm. just people are cautious about, but like... interested in
mm-hmm.
the kinds of relationships that can occur in these between these races, like Asari are all feminine in mm-hmm. their
those
appearance.
Are the blue ones.
Those are the blue ladies.
Yep.
And they're all feminine in their appearance, and whatever, but they can breed with anything. Mm-hmm. They can just use the genetic material to make another Asari.
Mm-hmm.
And because of this, Krogan tend to have a thing for Asari because Krogan were mm-hmm. genetically assaulted by two other races that were in the council,
mm-hmm.
so that they are unable to breed.
And a Krogan, that's the stick bug, right?
The Krogan is the giant dinosaur.
Okay, gotcha. Not the raptor.
Not the raptor.
That's different.
The bigger dinosaur.
Okay.
The bigger, angrier, mm-hmm. Head-buddy dinosaur.
I'm counting two reptiles so far. When are we going to get to, like, a bird race?
Well,
I guess a raptor's close.
That's basically a sure. bird. And, that's a fun thing. That's a real, like, in-universe thing that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
These things, these Krogan, which were genetically assaulted by other races for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. They're
kind of violent.
Sure.
Because of whatever.
But ancient history, right? Like,
basically, like mm-hmm. thousands of years ago. The idea was they were not ready for space travel. They were basically... less evolved than us currently, and then space races were like, all right, let's quicken the pace of their evolution, give them a bunch of guns, and told them to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did, and that became their culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people who did that were like, ooh, they're dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make sure there's not too many of them.
Oh boy, this sounds like it might be verging on some sort of political allegory that I don't know if these people are qualified to make.
I don't know, but it's definitely the best plot line throughout all three of the games
sure.
is the Krogan's genophage mm-hmm. is what they call them, what mm-hmm. they call the disease, their inability to breed. It's, I think it's stated like 1 in 10,000 children are viable.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you eventually, in number two, go to the Krogan homeworld, and
mm-hmm.
They talk about the fact that they have a cemetery, which is just a giant hole with a bunch of baby bodies in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
I love a good pit of sadness. That's like, that's world building 101 right there, you know. A tower? A pit? Either way. As long as it goes way up or way down, doesn't matter to me. You know, I'm there.
Kaden Alenko and Ashley Willems are your two starter squad mates.
Mm-hmm.
They're the human ones. They're the mage and the fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty solid. I usually keep Ashley with me because I am never going to be a straight soldier.
Mm-hmm.
But anything that can use all of the guns, and including a sniper rifle, is an effective tool.
And a sniper seems like, you know, if you're going to have a computer-controlled party member, keep her out of the way, and just occasionally something dies, and that's nice, you know?
Exactly. Kaden, I never used him because I was already the biotic.
Okay. So humans have had access, like, this psychic stuff is new, but not, like, new. Like, yeah.
They've been around for a few decades. Sure. Like, or maybe longer, like, maybe 100 years now, humans have been in the fray.
Mm-hmm.
But considering Asari lived 3,000 years on average, Krogan, like, 4,000 or 5,000.
Like, oh, boy.
No one gives a
shit.
That's
a seriously different time scale, yeah.
The only ones that have a similar time scale are the, God, I always forget her name. Not her name, but her race. Tali Zor-El, her race of people who live in suits because they can't breathe the air or they'll die.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah, you know, I remember that, sort of. Yeah, they're bound in. Gas people.
Yeah, them and the Turians seem to have a more near 100-something years age sure. span. But the other ones is just like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever.
So, again, despite...
That's because they're elves and dwarves.
They're elves and dwarves. So, despite the fact that humans have been around for a minute to the elves and dwarves, it's been a minute,
mm-hmm.
literally, and they don't give a shit.
I like them way better than elves and dwarves, though. It's just like that you know, seems like a natural jumping over point from the studio who used to make straight-up D&D, not just, like, fantasy setting, but actual D&D video games. That's like, you know, write what you know, right?
Exactly. And, yeah, for just a little while, you stick with these two and go on adventures through the Citadel trying to figure out, like, all right, where can we get contacts to support us in doing things? Because the primary mission is get the council, I cannot say that word.
Sure.
Council, mm-hmm. to agree to go after Saren, the bad guy, and convince them that he's a bad guy.
Because mm-hmm.
when you went up to him and said, hey, he's the bad guy, they're like, you're a dumb human. What the fuck do you know? We trust this guy.
Oh, okay. Sure. So there are bad seeds on the council.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to, you know, fix that, trying to get some support and some stuff, and
mm-hmm.
it involves meeting some shifty people, some politicians as well, or, you know,
yeah.
some politicians in general, and anyone who can get you a leg up on stuff. You meet the best character in Mass Effect,
mm-hmm.
my boy Garrus.
Garrus. What's Garrus's deal?
Garrus Vakarian. He's a Turian, and he's an engineer gunner guy.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole shtick was, well, the Turians are a war planet. They mm-hmm. like to do war. They do it good. They have a big navy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I joined the cops. My parents are disgraced to me. Think I'm a disgrace.
Mm-hmm.
Because I joined the cops.
Who stay at home?
Yep, the Citadel cops.
Yeah, okay.
Instead of the giant space navy.
Right. He's not among the conquerors.
Exactly. Yeah. And, he's gung-ho on, oh, Saren, he's evil as shit. I've known forever, and I'm gonna fucking murder him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this is the, you know, the enemy of the enemy is the friend, you know?
Yep, and then you two become best fucking bros
cool.
for the rest of the series.
No, like, you don't have to, right? But you particularly do.
I did.
Play the game.
Just fucked him. I would've, except I was already locked into a different love interest.
Sure. Can you homo him?
Not in the first game.
Okay. And they caught up?
Yeah, I think in maybe 2 or probably 3, they're like, oh, you can be gay now.
Yeah.
Because we're human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to let you do human beings.
They flipped the switch way earlier than this country did. still, so, you know.
That's not bad, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's
not great, but it's not bad.
But it's not bad, yeah.
As long as it gets there eventually, I guess. Anyways, once I got him on the crew... Never saw Alenko again.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry.
Right.
And, that's the general dish. You go, little side missions, getting people to like you, getting a little more information about Saren and ways to get some stuff done, some intel on this and that. Eventually you present it to the council, and they're like, ah, maybe you're right. We can't confirm or deny, but maybe you're right. And to see what happens... We're going to make you the first human Spectre, get you guys a little closer to on our level, and as a Spectre, space CIA, you can do whatever the fuck you want, collect whoever you want, and do whatever you want.
Okay. Yeah. Here, have a badge. That's cool.
And then you go. You go so off.
Is it like, you know, checklist, do it in whatever order you want, or is there like a set, you know, main quest path here?
There's
like...
definitely a main quest path that'll take you... to meet each character.
Sure.
I think you can do it out of order. I think you can meet some of the characters in different orders, but there are mm-hmm. this chunk... Excuse me. It is this chunk first, then another chunk, then another chunk.
Yeah, so it's just like, you know, suggested order.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Within the Citadel, in a strip club, I believe you also meet Rex. Mm-hmm. You might meet him somewhere else, but I think it's the strip club.
Mm-hmm.
And he's cool. Rex is a big, big Krogan, and the way they say hi to people is by headbutting them.
Mm-hmm. Neat. Yeah.
Let's see how hard the front of your head is. Cool. Nice.
Mm-hmm. And if you survive, he joins your team.
Yeah. I think in number two, you go on a diplomatic mission, and someone's like, "Your guys are a bunch of chumps. Why the fuck should we help?" And then you have the option to headbutt them
mm-hmm.
if your communication skill is high enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just headbutt the fucker.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, "That was weird. You're human. Okay. You have a regular skull." But they're mm-hmm. like, "I liked it, though.
Yeah, good job. Yeah.
Here's a gun. Let's be friends now."
Yeah, like the cut of your jib. Great.
So, like, they're fun. Mm-hmm. I love the Krogan so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, the remainder of this story is you collecting some of the rest of your teammates. Tali, you find her on the Citadel as well. She's having difficulty with her immigration status because her people are just nomads.
Mm-hmm.
Because they made an AI that killed everyone.
Ah.
It's a thing. It's a storyline
that's still out there?
Yeah, the Geth. They're cool, actually. Okay. They're a primary villain in number one as the Reapers and Saren are able to control them because mm-hmm. they are synthetic, and so are the Reapers.
Okay.
The main evil god monsters of space.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have a very one-sided opinion of the Geth for a while because you're with Tali, whose people were evicted from their homeworld by mm-hmm. the things they created. And now you're fighting them, and so you become quick, easy allies. She needs help. She wants to kill the bad things. You gotta like, yeah, we'll help you, and you can kill the bad things.
Mm-hmm.
Quick and easy. Her storyline also evolves throughout the three games, and that's great. That's the one thing I love most about Mass Effect, is the evolution throughout the characters across all the different...
Yeah. Because they knew they were going to make multiple games, right? That was the plan?
Yes, this mm-hmm. was definitely created and started as a trilogy.
Yeah.
So as you go through and collect your allies, the last of which that I recall is Liara, the Asari
mm-hmm.
lady. She's relevant for a number of reasons, one of which is one of the weird ways that you're figuring out stuff about the Reapers is that every time you touch something Prothean, which is just like the last big species that came before anyone knew anything mm-hmm. about.
Yeah, the ancient aliens.
The ancient aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been touching weird tech from them and having visions of Reapers.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, "I'm an archaeologist. I'm going to help."
Yeah, good.
"Also, my mom is a bad guy."
Mm-hmm.
And then you fight her.
Everybody's got to have, here's the good thing, here's the antagonist of my life, right? Exactly. It makes sense.
But yeah, you collect these guys, you have a fun time, you go on a fun mission where you do a bunch of fun missions for each one.
Mm-hmm.
In every game, consistently, 1, 2, and 3, there's always a prestige mission to try and make your ally like you better,
mm-hmm.
which can lead to different dialogue options and lead to more, I'm going to say, satisfying endings to their storylines.
Right. Do they get better at fighting, too? I mean, is there, like,
usually unlock a new ability that is otherwise mm-hmm. locked away. It's just like, power of friendship has unlocked my ability to use a grenade better.
Sure. Yeah, if, you know, I don't know what the circumstances of any of these, like, actual missions are, but if, you know, whatever you're doing legitimately gives the person, like, a tangible advantage, too, like, that would make sense. But even if it is the power of friendship, I'm like, yeah, you know, that's okay. Like, you trust your leader, that has, like, a measurable effect on whether you can fight, too, you know?
Yeah, and I can't recall exactly why any of the in-context, like, this is a new ability or whatever, but just mm-hmm. what the general premise of those prestige missions are. There's also a mission in the game in which it's completely optional, I believe, and I definitely think I skipped it the first time I played,
mm-hmm.
where you can just go to a moon and you fight a thing, and then you're given the option to good job on completing this mission, unlock an ability from one of the other classes.
Oh, interesting. Cool. Yeah. That's just for you, eh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of little things like that. I was just like, oh, that was interesting. And you have more things that are really interesting and then continue to have effects and ripples in the other games, mm-hmm. which is the main reason this game franchise is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Because
it all ties in.
Yeah. There's a moment, I'm going to only talk about two moments left in number one, and then I'm going to move on to number two and three and breeze through them. There's only two things that really resonated with number one that moved on in a satisfactory manner, and that's when you fight with Liara's mom. She is the matriarch of wherever, which means she's just super old and incredibly powerful with her biotic powers,
mm-hmm.
and also wears an ugly headpiece. Mm-hmm. She's weird looking.
Space stuff just cannot get its fashion together, to be honest. Like, I tend to prefer space stories with no aliens just because it typically means that the various human factions get to actually wear clothes that, like, look cool. I don't know, it just seems to never go hand in hand, but... Also, you know, villains tend to get whacked out fashion senses, too, so who knows?
Oh, yeah. Saren, as I was playing the game, I was like, how does no one realize this is a bad guy? Mm-hmm. His armor's a mutated Reaper monster,
mm-hmm.
and his face is just all fucked up. Anyways, she's cool, has a weird aesthetic to her, and is clearly being mind-controlled, and we try to save her. She does not get saved. She gets murdered.
Tragedy. It's
bad times. Liara's sad. But this entire time, we've been fighting in front of a Thorian, which is, I don't know, giant space spiders?
Mm-hmm.
And they're an infestation in the universe.
They don't ever join you? Never get a space spider party member?
Not a member.
Oh, okay.
Damn. Not a party member, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the reason that they, at one point, elevated the Krogan.
Mm-hmm.
Was because these things were taking over the universe.
And everybody needed friends for the space spider business.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And they're powerful because they're big and strong, are moderately smart enough to, you know, have space travel of some kind, and have a hive mind.
Sure.
So, like, yeah.
Yeah. I do like when there's layers of, like, you know, hey, maybe if this were another story, it would be the enemy of the day. But, you know, now, like, we're not as worried about them.
Exactly. And it's great. You have, at the end of this fight, you talk to the Thorian queen who's been trapped there for a long time. She's been experimented on and altered and changed in various ways because they're trying to make use of her telepathic powers because mm-hmm. they can mind control people.
Yeah.
Which is also why they were terrifying.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make use of that. And you are given the option to kill her because she's a genuine threat to the damn universe.
Mm-hmm.
Or let her free because she promised not to kill anyone.
She's like, yeah, so she's like, I'm going to be good now.
She's mm-hmm. just like, hey, man, I just want to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, yeah, I let her go every time.
Okay. Does it matter?
Yes. In number three, when the big war starts, you can have a Thorian armada supporting you.
Okay, yeah, so they do repay a good turn, so that's interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you don't let her live, I don't think you have enough... leeway in number three to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you do if you do other things, but I don't recall.
Sure.
And the other mission is one of the final missions in the game. And you go after Saren, and you find out that he's trying to breed Krogan who are no longer affected by the Genophage.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Rex, the Krogan who can't have kids, just like 98% of the fucking population.
Mm-hmm.
Is interested in, hey, maybe we don't explode this cloning facility. We could use it to cure my entire fucking species.
Yeah, that seems like something you would, in general, want. What is his aim that makes it bad?
He has mind control over them.
Okay, so he would just, you know, like, these guys are big and strong. I want them for an army. Now, is he cloning them fully grown and ready to fight, or is this a real long-term...
I think they're, like, speed grown,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, sure.
And, in this mission, the very first time I played it, you can talk to Rex and he can get kind of mad.
Mm-hmm.
And my speech powers weren't all the way up because I was like, oh, who cares about speech? That's mm-hmm. not going to be critical to this game.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't able to convince him to like, hey man, we're going to find a cure. We'll do whatever. Instead, he just gets angry and he's not going to hit me, but he looks like he's going to, he's not mm-hmm. going to shoot me, but he looks like he's going to hit me. So Ashley shoots him in the fucking head because she's a damn racist.
I mean, he was about to kill you, you know? It's the... That's the leader.
I have magic powers. I would have been fine. Anyways.
I'm not going to bat for this racist. I'm just, I didn't play this game, so I'm trying to figure out what they're going for. But like,
she's really not that bad. I keep saying racist, but she's just like, I'm cautious of these other races that think of us as young children.
So, what if you leave Ashley at home? I mean, is everyone there guaranteed?
During the cutscenes, everyone's there.
Mm-hmm.
This is a...
Sure.
You move up with your squad, the rest of them show up.
Okay, yeah. We're going to stay back and, you know, be the, right, it's one of those.
One of those.
Okay, understood. Yeah. They don't, like, hey, party limitations, whatever. It's been worse in other games before. So, is there any reason you can't just kill the bad man and then keep the lab? Like,
I believe the whole shtick is just the Reaper is coming. He's collecting the army. He's about to activate them. It's just...
The real bad man's way too big.
Yes.
Got it.
It's... All threats are coming from every angle. Mm-hmm. We need to take away their power to activate this, and then we can go fight the boss without having an army at our back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, it still proved you could make it, so it could be made again some other time. That's reasonable, I guess, but...
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, when I replayed the game for the 7th or 6th time, I replayed it a lot, but... Eventually, I got the ending I wanted where he was convinced, like, all right, I'm going to follow you because I trust you as a person, but you promise you're going to help me fix my species.
Yep.
And then you go in and you fight. You fight the big boss. You blow up the cloning facility.
Mm-hmm.
And as everything's going to shit, one final decision is made in which someone has to stay back to make sure everything blows the fuck up correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to pick between it being Ashley or... Alenko.
Mm-hmm.
And Alenko, you can be super gay with in the majority of the series.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the designated gay for the gay shepherds.
Cool.
I picked Ashley because I have not used Alenko since the first mission.
Yeah.
And despite her being moderately racist sometimes, mostly was just like, I'm scared of things I don't know and want to help as much as I can for whatever.
I'm going to assume that 9 times out of 10, the people playing this game have been rolling with the aliens the entire time anyway, because they're brand new. You know, it's like the same thing I was thinking with the mechanics is just like, if you can have things that aren't guns, every game's got guns, why wouldn't you pick something else? Like, not very few games have blue people and lizard people. Like, I would roll with them, you know? I don't know, it just seems like it could go either way. To my hypothetical experience of this video game. That said, I'm going to leave behind the man every time. It's just, you know, sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, my dude.
Can you be lesbian with the racist?
I think so, eventually.
Okay, great.
I don't know. I was never a woman. Mm-hmm. I know Lady Shepherd's a real popular popular model, but, like, I just never used her.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that he dies, and that is consistent. He's dead forever.
So, and I assume Rex stays dead, too. Like, you know, everybody you lose, like...
If you allow him to die, he's dead. But, and number two, if you saved Rex, and who died between Ashley and Kaiden does not matter. It just means who's going to be on your team next time.
Right.
It's the one who isn't dead.
The drama.
And number two, there's more characters, but there's really a whole lot less that feels as...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, consequential. Number two is has a real unique story in which you are coming off of a lot of success. People have heard that you're the first Spectre. You solved this problem and you outed this guy as bad. You're brought to light the potential that there might be Reapers, a thing of lore that people don't believe in, and all sorts of stuff going on.
Yeah, so they don't even really show the main ultimate antagonist. Like, that's good. I like that, you know, they don't just keep having to up the scales. Like,
in number one, it was Sovereign, which is the ship that Saren rides in.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Reaper. Everyone assumed it was just his ship.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, one of the final fights, I suppose, you realize, oh no.
It's been alive the whole time.
Yeah, that's the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, interesting. In number two, you still don't really fight too many Reapers.
Mm-hmm.
There's only, I think, one or two that you end up dealing with, one of which is derelict and dead and floating in space,
uh-huh.
and is a trap in you, whatever. And the other one is the final boss, which is apparently a Reaper made out of humans.
Interesting.
So it was human-shaped, and they made a quick mention that it seems as though the Reapers are made by processing millions of genetic living organisms and making a Reaper out of them, and whatever they look like will be dependent on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they forgot about that, because in the third one, every Reaper looks the same tentacle monster.
Okay. I mean, maybe they're made out of those old guys.
No, the Protheans. You have one on your team. You talk to one eventually. Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you only have one on your team if you bought the DLC.
Oh, okay. Very well.
But they're now, bug people.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at Ali on his computer right now, for the listener's benefit, has a list of the squad members from Mass Effect 2 pulled up on the screen, and one of them apparently includes Zatanna from the DC Comics universe, so I imagine she's heavy in the psychic powers department.
Yeah.
No, it's a woman in a bow tie. I'm just like, she stands out from the rest of these, you know, sci-fi looking motherfuckers.
Miranda Lawson. Mm-hmm. She's basically the Ashley of this particular game. The one is like, I kind of want to be with her, I guess, mm-hmm. is what I'm supposed to feel.
Sure. She looks like Miranda Lawson, sounds like the name of someone who, like, is the lawyer who represents a, like, someone who goes to the hospital and then, like, you know, the operation goes fine, but they just want their money back. Like she would be that, you know, fake malpractice.
Yeah, fair enough.
Is what I'm looking at right now.
That's so good.
I don't know, but it just came to, like, very specifically, like, Miranda Lawson, attorney at large, or whatever the fuck they're called. There's a lot more people than there were in number one.
Yeah, there's a lot less that I'm going to talk about for each individual mm-hmm. one.
Is there less in the game, or are we just... Yeah,
there's, okay. there's a little less adventuring in, mm-hmm. in number two. Number two is a little more linear. There are some, go off and do this. Each character still has a prestige mission, which is what sort of dictates whether they're going to live or die at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to do them all.
Interesting. Okay, so... I have two questions. One, do their experience levels just straight up, like, hey, if I'm pulling out this person out of the freezer, they haven't leveled up in several missions and they suck now? Like, or is there some catch up?
Everyone is at base.
Okay.
Which is just how it goes. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. Do you mean if you have your squad and you use them?
Yeah. You have your squad, you use them, they level up, right?
Yeah, everyone gets the same experience.
Oh, okay. It's just like, it's your level based? Yeah. Okay.
Whatever
okay,
your level okay. is, their level is. Yeah. You just have to... Mm-hmm. re-establish where their points go, because you can't.
In number one, I could see that not being the case, but in this, where it's like, oh god, we've got a bunch more, and the people from number one come back, like...
No, you know. It's always based on your level.
Sure.
You can just assign their skill points to wherever you want.
Mm-hmm. My second question, I might have forgotten it, so that's embarrassing. we just have to cut around this, or not, in any case.
You think on that.
Oh, my second question. This wasn't the one I originally thought of, but are there any too hots yet? Like, I'm not going to ask you to pull up specifics, but do they ever say, like, a stupid-ass temperature at any point?
They don't specify...
It seems like we're right up the alley, right?
They don't specify a whole lot of temperatures in, mm-hmm. like, conversation, but if you read a bunch of data pads, mm-hmm. because, of course, this has a bunch of data pads with notes that are irrelevant to a lot of things, right. but do some fun world building. You learn a little bit about the weapons in mm-hmm. this game. And the idea behind the laser guns is that there's, like, a special particle
mm-hmm.
inside of the clips. Instead of, like, a bullet,
mm-hmm.
it's basically a grain of sand, but it's special sand.
Uh-huh.
And it gets so superheated and shot out so close to the speed of light mm-hmm. that it burns a hole through things and functions as a bullet.
Okay.
And I don't even remember what it was, but the number mm-hmm. they specified... is not acceptable.
And that's also... That's not a laser, either. That's like... If it's shooting an actual object, that's not...
Becomes plasma as it flies through the air, is
like
the idea.
Like, we have lasers in real life. Not as weapons yet, but like...
The idea behind this technology is that as it is shot so fast, it mm-hmm. heats up and becomes a plasma bolt.
Mm-hmm. All right, I bang my gavel on the desk. It is a too hot. I decree it thus. Motion passed.
Yeah. That's fair.
Anyway, I just wanted to get that in there. It'd been, you know, we did it too hot last time, but I mean, I'm always hungry for them. And like, it's Mass Effect. Hey, Ollie, what is a Mass Effect?
So there are these giant relays.
I didn't expect it to actually be a thing. Please continue.
So there are these giant relays, which were built by the Protheans, and is what allowed everyone to go off into space as successfully as they have. When near a mass relay, a ship can use its power to travel beyond or at the speed of light,
okay.
Whatever the specific, the number, whatever they said was. They also were the ones that built the Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's just like, well, we're just going to live here now.
That seems like it's suspicious that everyone just thinks that's okay. But I mean, I'm sure they eventually get to that, right?
Yeah, eventually get to that.
I hold so many questions. I didn't mean to cut you all the way off. But like, you know, number two, Reapers are showing up. You know, you're trying to make everybody like, no, really.
Well, and number two is actually, you start off with a bit of a cliffhanger, just like this sentence, because we're going to the self-promotion corner first.
Oh, understand. Understood. Oh, understood.
Would you like to...
Oh, right, yeah, I suppose I would. So, you know, you've been, rest your voice, my friend, I got it covered. Welcome to the self-promotion corner, everyone. We don't really have any good space jokes for it. We're just going to tell you about what we need you to do for us. Patreon.com/Delta Cryptid Productions. It is how we sustain ourselves. It's how we pay the bill for this podcast. It's how we pay some of the bills for our life. It's how, if we're ever going to actually play one of these Mass Effects and get into it, like, for real heavy details-wise, in, like, some years, you know?
Yeah.
We're not just going to rehash this real quick. It's how we can justify spending that much time on like mashing through a video game and taking notes about it. Like, we like video games, but it is work. In any case, give us some money. For just $1 a month would make an extremely significant impact on our proceedings. If everyone listening gave $1 a month, it would literally change our lives to an extravagant degree. But even then, at $3 a month, you get bonus episodes. Every episode of our main show comes packed in with a bonus episode. We are release those, like, month to month. They don't come out right on the tail of each other. So if patrons are listening, like, we'll get those up. Don't worry about it. But it is, like we try to, like, we tend to do those all at once and put them on in a batch. That's just sort of how our pattern has come out. In any case, we do a remix. We make up our own version and try to make it, you know, silly and cool. And, like, we just tend to let our hair down and have a good time with those. They're a lot of fun. And there's a whole bunch of other bonus things that are going to become accessible, too. We're making a tabletop game. We're going to put the beta rules for that on the Patreon. $1 patrons can see them. And, hell, play our game. We would just be ecstatic. We think it's pretty damn good so far, but we're also ourselves, and we live in our own minds, so we need to hear from people. higher tiers, you can tell us what to do a podcast about. You can join us on the podcast. You get to dictate how we spend our time. Our lives are open books to you, so long as our checkbooks are open to receiving from you. And also, please follow us on Twitter would be huge. Give us a review on iTunes. Throw us a big 5 stars. It would have a massive effect. nailed it. On our, please give us 5 stars anyway. Even though what I just said, you can leave that out of your review. And just fucking engage with us. We see you listening. We want to know. What do you think?
Yeah.
If someone said, you should do an episode about this and didn't even pay for it, we would think about it still, just because we'd be so happy to hear from you.
Yeah, it would probably take a minute, but we'll definitely consider it.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd be like, so-and-so wants to hear about this, that's great. All right. Oh, and if you want to turn our self-promotion corner into an other promotion corner, if you're making something, we'll advertise for you. The cheapest you can possibly get advertisements on any digital platform. We have been looking. We promise that's the case. So consider all those things, and also consider the rest of the Mass Effect trilogy we're going to talk about. I got everything, right?
Yeah, there are YouTube videos going up on a weekly basis of us playing through Sekiro.
That's pretty significant, isn't it?
Yeah.
We also would like you to do this.
Yeah, if you're interested in that, have fun watching us play that. You can find our YouTube, just searching Delta Cryptid Productions on YouTube.
Nothing else is going to come up.
We
made sure of that.
We have a very specific name, and we're going to get found.
I'll put a link in the episode description as well. I think this is the first one that's going up, or like just barely, since we started doing those.
Exactly. There's also going to be Let's Plays of me and Jess playing through Outlast, the trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's terrifying and awful.
I was going to join them, but they disinvited me. Find out about it in episode one.
It's a whole drama.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do some reviews of some silly manga.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very silly. The reviews aren't silly, though. Well, they're a little silly.
Sometimes.
Ah, his face is just so charming when he's going off on about things that he likes. Trust me, I'm here listening to him talk about Mass Effect.
All right, but that's all we have. Let's get back into this, because I only have maybe 30 minutes, and I'm going to tell you about two whole games.
Yeah, sure. Bring it on.
All right, so here we go. Let's make it through. Mm-hmm. In this game, there's a number of characters who are DLC, and you do not get them unless you get the DLC.
Okay. So I'm seeing the whole picture, not necessarily what's in the main game.
Yes. There's the ones that I did play with were Garrus. He comes back as Archangel. After you guys split up, he became a mercenary and decided, I'm Batman. This place is bad and evil. I'm going to fuck it up. And he does.
Okay.
He fucks up Omega-3, the
fatty acid.
Well, yes. But also the space station that's just full of shifty, shady assholes everywhere.
Okay.
So he goes in and starts a I'm-a-kill-everyone racket.
It's like, you know, corruption, graft politician type stuff, right? That's what it sounds like? Okay, yeah.
Gangs,
yeah, get him. Good.
Gangs and whatnot. He's just like, are you recruiting kids? I'm going to kill you now.
Yep. Yeah, the chaotic good sort of situation.
Yeah.
Take them all out. Who gives a fuck?
The small quest to collect him is, you're like, oh man, I heard Archangel's pretty cool and strong. Let's go find him. And you find out that there's an army of mercenaries going to kill him. So you're like, I'm going to join the army of mercenaries, walk in, and then switch sides. And you do, and you're like, it's Garrus! He's my best friend!
Oh, great. Yeah,
and it's just like, oh, cool. That was great. That was the first main character you recruit, and it's the only one that really matters.
Okay.
That's not true. But he's my favorite one, because it's Garrus.
Yeah, I'm glad they hook you up with someone you know you're going to have for the long term, like, right away, so you can get used to them.
Mm-hmm. The other character's Grunt. He is sort of like from the first game. He's a clone of he's a Krogan clone with the Genophage cure in him.
Mm-hmm.
He can have babies.
Cool.
And he's also a child, but you know, smart and has a weird time.
Okay.
He's real strong. Mm-hmm. Nothing too special.
So they cloned him at regular speed. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
There's a different cloning facility, and he's a part of that with being controlled by some kind of evil scientist Krogan, trying to do a good thing, cure the Genophage, but also just like, all right, I'm gonna kidnap some people and experiment on them.
Yep. The end justifying the mean type of motherfuckers.
Yeah. And Jacob Taylor, human McHuman, replaced the one you killed the first time.
Okay. Like, does Jacob Taylor have the same stats? Like, is it a mechanical replacement?
He is basically Alenko.
Okay. Regardless of which one of them dies, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure they assumed.
They lean. Yeah. Got it.
Oh, no. My bad. Because Miranda is a copy of... She is the biotic. He's the, I think, soldier and engineer.
Okay.
Is his.
So someone exists to fill in that gap.
Yeah, always a class copy of each one.
I kind of wish it were like more like, you know, hey, all right, yeah, this is not available to you anymore. You sacrificed it. Eat shit. But
it should have died.
Mm-hmm.
He's all right. He's real basic. He has a fun mission where you find out about his dad and his past. I think maybe in number two you can be gay, because I think I had some romantic dialogue with him, but it didn't go anywhere, so maybe you can't.
Maybe he can't.
Yeah, maybe he can't. But his mission was find Dad. Mm-hmm. Dad is leading a weird sex cult of people who were mentally impaired by local fauna.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you disgust me. You're taking advantage of people. I'm gonna kill you,
Yeah,
Dad.
That's not good.
Yeah, it was real weird.
Yeah.
That's about it. There's nothing like, ooh, in number three, he... Meh.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. They seem to go real, like, backstory light on the humans, because, again, like, they probably know what everyone's there for.
Exactly. Miranda Lawson, she is pretty critical to the story, because the story starts off in number two. you and your original crew are just flying off to do things, mm-hmm. and then you get attacked by a big ship and murdered. You mm-hmm. died. You fell to a planet. You are dead.
Okay.
And then you get found by Cerberus, the company that Miranda Lawson works for, a human terrorist organization that pretends to be a human rights organization.
Oh, okay. So they give you a backup racist, just in case you got rid of the racist in number one, huh?
Sort of, yeah. And eventually you meet Ashley in number two, and you're just like, I'm part of Cerberus. She's like, yo, man, they're too racist.
Mm-hmm. Too racist for me. I you know.
She's also calmed down.
I quit those guys. Yeah.
But yeah, it's fun times. And it does make it seem for a while like maybe they're a little extreme once in a while, but it mostly mm-hmm. seems like they're just trying to protect humans who are mm-hmm. currently being attacked in their colonies.
Yeah, they are the underdog in this, which is not how most fantasy settings take humans. They typically, you know, map that like they make them the most populous and the most wealthy and all that other stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her whole shtick is she works for the Elusive Man. Oh. That's his name.
I've heard of this Elusive Man.
He's ugly as fuck and
yeah.
kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the leader of Cerberus, and he gets you to do missions for him to try and figure out more information about the Reapers, as well as the Collectors, the main villains of this particular sure. part of the series.
And, I mean, it does make sense. That's what you'd want, though, right? Like, yeah. hey, those Reapers, they're sons of bitches.
And, like, these guys seem shady, but they haven't done anything too bad in front of your eyes, at least.
I think we kind of segued off, but you were dead. They rebuild you or something?
Yeah, like, they just sort of rebuild you, which is how you can, even if you transfer your character over, you can remake your face.
Oh, interesting. That's like, yeah, I love suddenly coming upon that's why, you know, yeah. like the game concessions here.
They made a lot of strides in graphical ability, and they're mm-hmm. like, yeah, all of our character customization, number one, was real ugly.
Ah, I got it. Yeah, that's the perk that comes in, like, hey, you know, you owe us literal fucking life debt now, but on the other hand, like, here, pick your new face on this menu, you know, that's the service they provide. Yeah, it's just like, you know, old-timey video games, that's the entire reason anything ever was anything, period, was, oh, technical constraints. So I like even in a modern time where that's not mandatory, seeing like, oh, that's why this whole plot event, you know, was influenced by this.
Yeah, that is a lot of fun. I like that a lot. But yeah, she's the one that rebuilt you. Mm-hmm. She's also, her backstory is her dad was also an evil scientist. Everyone's an evil mm-hmm. fucking scientist. There's no good
science. That's like the number one plot. Make someone's dad bad, and then you learn about their intergenerational trauma, and then now they're a closer friend to you. Bada bing.
Yeah, and her whole shtick is she's genetically perfect.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Yeah, okay. Okay, Miranda. I might make the episode picture a picture of Miranda Lawson so people can look at this with little effort and be like, that's...
Her whole shtick is, again, she was built by her dad. He's made a few other of her, like, they're her sisters, but they're basically the same person. And he's just trying to make the perfect person, the most beautiful, physically powerful.
She does have black hair, listeners, but she is otherwise an alabaster fucking, you know. Like,
glowing white.
Yeah.
And,
don't worry, we are making the perfect people. That's not okay. Like,
yeah.
This elusive man is starting to remind me of a very specifically elusive man who eluded people during a little old war called World War II.
To be fair, the elusive man isn't her dad. Okay. He's just like, oh, hey, want to work for me? You have trauma that I can make fun
right,
of.
Right, of course.
But whatever. And that's her thing. Mm-hmm. She's like, I have these emotions of like feeling inferior, maybe, because like I'm supposed to be perfect, but it's so hard to be perfect. Oh. I'm like, good God, you're the worst character.
Hey, remember when this was about, like, you know, working with people who had violence done to them instead of the people who are doing all of that? You know, cheap, fired from my party immediately. I'm hypothetically playing this game.
Yeah,
see ya.
Then there's Samara. She's the new Asari on your squad because you always have one.
Right.
And she's basically the Asari's version of, like, a Green Beret mega murderer.
Mm-hmm.
She is sent out to find mega murderers. That's her job.
Mm-hmm.
She hunts.
Okay.
And she's real strong, and you can have her on your team, or when you meet her daughter, you can have her on your team instead by betraying her and letting her get fucking murdered.
Huh. Betraying the daughter? Or...
Betraying the mother.
Okay.
You can choose to be with the daughter as, like, a friend. But I'm pretty sure, like, their whole shtick is her daughters are murderers because any child she has is a kind of creature that if she has sex with them, they will die.
Okay.
They just have weird Asari power. That sucks your life out through their vagina?
Oh, man. Okay. Who?
I don't know, man.
Now it's time to play Find the Fetish. We're going to interview all of the Mass Effect developers and see who's that succubus fetishist.
Well, you...
Mm-hmm. Is this another episode of Too Hot?
Let's keep this one...
Too Hot is strictly literal.
But yeah, they're powerful characters, they're good to have on the team, mm-hmm. but otherwise their story is just, I'm a mom and I need to go find and kill my kids who are evil.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of parentage issues in this one.
But when we get to Mass Effect 3, are we going to find the Asari who says, I only fight by kicking people with my bare feet? Because that seems like the trajectory they're on at this point.
Maybe. Tali shows up again. Okay. She's great.
Welcome back, Tali.
In number one, in case anyone was curious, she's my love interest. Mm-hmm. She's just the fucking best. In number two, I can't be with her because there's a better character that if it wasn't number three, I would have married her.
Mm-hmm.
Good God.
Okay.
But yeah, she's cool. She has a long storyline about the Geth. You have a lot to do with that, especially since one of them joins your team.
So what's this Geth business? Are they the suit people?
The suit people made the Geth.
The Geth were the robots.
So were the AI the systems.
Robots, yeah.
And in this one, you find out through Legion, mm-hmm. A Geth member, that they were made to, you know, do stuff. But once they started having feelings mm-hmm. and emotions, the creators, Tali's people, were like, we should turn them off. They're not supposed to have emotions. They're not supposed to be, like, living mm-hmm. AI. They're just supposed to be functioning robot AI.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to be turned off. Mm-hmm. So they started a war.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh, the Geth are just trying not to die. That seems fair.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really cool. It starts a lot of tensions between you and Tali and Legion and other things, and it continues on to number three.
So she's not like... Because this happened a long time ago, right? Is she still team turn them off? Because that seems like a foregone conclusion at this point.
They're all team turn them off because, interesting. They cannot go home mm-hmm. to their home planet where they should live.
Well, you went and fucking, like, it's almost as if they, I don't know, destroyed their own atmosphere or something. Some things you just have to live with the bed that you shit. Sorry.
Yeah, but you do take her on some missions, and you can take, like, something that happens a lot more in this one, depending on who you take on your missions, they'll have fun little dialogues with each other,
mm-hmm.
and if you take Tali and Legion... It's a real uncomfortable dialogues.
Do they scrap it out? I mean, like...
They have their, so, Legion, mm-hmm. how's it going?
Okay, they just talk, though.
They talk, but, mm-hmm. like, things come up, like, I like the creators for the most part. I wish we could talk more and be, mm-hmm. like, friends.
Right.
She's like, that's not a thing that I've ever heard a Geth say or anything. Mm-hmm. They've only just...
Right.
And, like, they hash things out, mm-hmm. and it's... really, like, enthralling, and it only happens if you have them on your squad and happen to be hanging around mm-hmm. long enough for the dialogue.
You bring them out on a bunch of missions or whatever. Like, yeah, and then you'll eventually see it. Okay, that's interesting. I'm playing these days, this is quick, in Baldur's Gate, which is, like, old, same people. I mean, like, half a generation before these games came out, but, like...
30% the same people?
Yeah. Same... presumably sort of creative direction and all that stuff. But Baldur's Gate is explicitly D&D, and there are some party members that, like, either just in general or as a result of decisions that you make with your group, will just eventually say, nope, I've had it. They go or I go, or we kill each other in the street right now. And I'm like, that's awesome. Like, you know, I can understand that in this where, you know, more major events of the plot are hinged on... keeping or killing these characters, you know, they wouldn't let it happen outside of that, you know, that track. And the party members in Baldur's Gate are, like, connected to the main antagonist, but it's just, you know, mostly just because the main antagonist is going to fuck up everything and everybody has some interest or another in getting it done, that they could let you just, you know, oh, one of these people's going to die now. or you know, or I have to dismiss them permanently, effectively killing them to me. I don't know. I just think that's very interesting.
No, any changes to the party layout is critically, like, just like an overwhelming decision that really, like, changes your game and changes your gameplay. Right. Like, that's a thing I do love about BioWare, at least some of their stuff. And I don't know, definitely got me into this stuff.
Yeah. That's the draw.
Mm-hmm. Legion's cool. He's a Geth. He joins your team.
Mm-hmm.
He wears your armor from when you crash landed on a random planet, so it is a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever.
Does it look like what you were wearing at the end of Mass Effect 1? Because that'd be hilarious.
No, I think it's just a stock standard N7 armor.
Whatever you look like on the cover of the box is what... Yeah, got it.
And, yeah, he's cool. He's very robotic, but weirdly funny.
Mm-hmm.
Has a fun relationship with Edie, the AI of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
But not as fun as a relationship as Joker, the pilot, has.
Okay. Joker, huh?
Joker, he was in number one. Mm-hmm. He's a guy with brittle bones, can't do much, but he can fly a ship real good.
Glass bones and paper skin? So yep. He doesn't actually party up with you, he's just...
You just hang out with him, you go into his cockpit and like, hey man, how's it going? And you guys have dumb conversations.
Is this the Normandy that I've heard so much about? Okay.
Exactly. And, he falls in love with his ship. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. He barely ever leaves it.
Sure.
Falls in love with the brain on his ship. It's fun. But the other characters that are left are Thane. He's just a weird fishman assassin.
Mm-hmm.
His shtick is, I'm getting old and dying. I'm going to absolve myself of my sins or not by trying to make up for them by killing bad people now.
Sure. And that, okay, fair enough.
Not a whole lot. You do do a thing with his kid one time and like try to set him on the right path.
It's not super related, huh?
Yeah. and then Mordin Solace. He's a different race of thing whose name I don't remember. But these guys,
I'm seeing a thumbnail of him. He looks like, you know, like a little gray man. I mean, he's like red tinted, but like classic alien design.
Yeah, he's alien. These are the alien looking motherfuckers. And their whole shtick is they're incredibly smart. And constantly fast, like always moving, rarely sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they live 35 years, but in 5 years they can learn more than any other race ever.
Okay, yeah, just speed demons. Interesting.
And they're cool. Mm-hmm. His whole thing is, oh yeah, I know a lot about the Genophage. I helped make it worse through a special ops mission one time. Because it seemed like it was getting cured on its own. People were, you know, mutating, and it was gonna stop being effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sent on a secret mission to make it worse. And he's like, I feel bad about that. I'm gonna cure it.
Everybody here's atoning for stuff, apparently.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
And he decides, I'm gonna cure the fucking Genophage, and that's his goddamn goal. And he doesn't show up until number 3, but he makes it happen. And then there's Jack.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking love Jack.
So I see the thumbnail for Jack. We are dealing with the sort of fashion sense of Okoye from Black Panther. Like, you know, the bald and the sort of neck accessory. I don't really know what you call that, but like...
Collar?
Yeah.
It's a high collar?
No, I'm doesn't she have like a... It looks like a choker on too? I don't know. I can't tell from here. We can negotiate this down. No, Jack's just got some like tech stuff going on.
Yeah. She wears basically a harness as a shirt. It covers mostly just her nipples.
Okay.
And otherwise, it's just neck to toe tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing with her is she's a super powered space pirate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Amazon looking motherfucker.
Yeah. And she was experimented as a kid to become a superbiotic because Asari are good at biotics. Humans are capable of doing biotics with implants. So they're like, what if we make humans better than Asari by experimenting on little kids and making them fight each other.
Sure, 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 sure.
Then she got angry and killed everyone on the ship and then became a space pirate.
Yeah, don't experiment on me.
Yep.
Bastard. Gotcha.
And she's very angry and hates everyone and everything, and you get her on your crew.
Yeah, this seems like the number one love interest. Like, everybody playing this game is gonna go, like, this is the character, from what I can tell. All of the thirstos on my Twitter are gonna be like, yo, Jack, number one.
Jack is number one girl, for sure. Yeah, you can definitely gay her up.
Yeah,
I know this for a fact.
Yeah, of course. Like, you know, she's sending all of the signals that were of the time of this game coming out certainly are present here on this character.
Yeah, I'm surprised my male character was able to get with her.
Yeah, me too. That's super weird.
But no, she's great. She's super powerful. It's a fun time. You go on, you know, your her quest, and you find out who the bad guys who experimented on people were. You get her closure and you shut shit down. And near one of the scenes where, like, in every episode, in every game, there's a scene where the people who you were most, like, in a romance with, you, I don't know, have to pick between in an ultimatum style thing. And in number one, it was Ashley and Tali for me. And I was like, I'm just trying to be nice to you guys so I can get the bonuses from your character, but I'm definitely going to pick her.
Yeah.
And then this one is like, oh, I don't even like you, Miranda.
Yeah.
What is this? This is not a choice?
Yeah. No, yeah. What the hell? No, I'm out of here.
And, man, Jack is fun. She's just a good character. So angsty.
And, like, Psychic Blaster seems like good thing.
She's a 100% just psychic puncher. She shows up, punches, psychics out.
So it seems like we're dealing with a lot of secret conspiracies and other nonsense like that in Mass Effect 2.
Exactly. The biggest revelations are just, as you go around, you find out that the collectors, the thing collecting humans and making them disappear, are the Protheans' version of the blue monsters that were attacking you in the first game. They were the blue monsters, or the blue zombies. Yeah, there we go.
Right,
were humans that were converted into monsters by the Reapers, and the collectors are the same thing except for the Protheans.
Okay,
and number two, you find out that that's a thing the Reapers do. They just
amass, grab stuff and
turn them into their own army. And you spend a lot of time trying to figure out what's happening to the people and saving the humans and working with Cerberus to save humankind, because that's the thing that they're up to. But as you do, you're like figuring out weird things going on. Like, you go to save a small colony and some people are attacking things, and it's like, oh, they're wearing Cerberus armor and this is blah 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 blah. And near the end, you find the human Reaper. It's human shaped for some reason. You fight it, you win, and the elusive man who's giving you kind of shitty information and even sent you on a trap mission, knowing that they got a message like, ah, someone help us, we're on this derelict Reaper. Oh no. And the loser man was like, oh, that's definitely a trap. We know it's a trap. Here's a signal that says it's a trap. Let's send these guys and tell them it's not a trap.
Yep.
And
and also it's called the elusive man. So that's gotta pay off at some point.
Exactly. And eventually near the end you get the option to like, oh, you want to, instead of destroying this facility where this human Reaper was being made, keep it and learn about the Reapers? And, like, part of me was like, that makes sense, but no. I'm gonna blow this shit to hell.
You play a Mass Effect game, you get to blow up a facility. That's your treat, and you earned it, so blow up the facility, it seems like, is the thing so far.
Yeah. And, it's a fun game. With number two, the most emotional parts are just Morden and his, like, drive to try and cure the genophage. Getting Garrus back on your team is a big deal that just feels emotional. He mentions you can have dialogue with him where it's just like, he was incredibly lonely and felt purposeless and worthless. And, I don't know. All the characters have real key moments that are worth going through the miles and miles of, like, mediocre dialogue to get to the fucking nuggets of dialogue.
Okay. All right, we're opening it up now. Yeah.
And, yeah, this game has hundreds of writers, probably, mm-hmm. or at least a few dozen, and not all of them are equal
sure.
in their ability.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, that's tough. to keep something consistent, that's very difficult. And I always am, like, very impressed when something does keep it consistent.
Yeah. Number three is basically just wrapping up all the loose ends.
Mm-hmm. I heard everyone was very, very impressed with the way that this turned out, and just, like, extremely, like, a big fan of the resolution of the yeah. loose ends.
I'm gonna get to the fucking controversy of the ending in 5 minutes.
Okay.
I'm gonna do everything really quickly, because it's not important.
Delta Cryptid rapid fire on the clock. Let's go.
The characters in number three are the same characters from number one, except you replace whoever you murdered in the first one with James Vega.
All right.
Who's just a beefy, beefy gay.
Mm-hmm.
Just sweet. The beefiest gay. He is otherwise kind of boring, a little mm-hmm. silly. Liara rejoins her team. Edie, the ship's AI,
mm-hmm.
now that you're on the team against the elusive man, mm-hmm. he sends a robot assassin to kill you. And then Edie's like, oh, can you take her body when you finish killing her?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, cool, I have plans.
Okay, that they give you a Cortana.
Yes.
Okay.
And then Joker fucks her.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Well, I'm glad it's not you. I'm glad that's Joker. Like, that had been built up.
Yeah, they've been building up that relationship. Mm-hmm.
And I've like, all of these sci-fi games where it's like, here's this, you know, materialized computer intelligence that we are giving you for the sole purpose of amusing your large penis, great video game player, is like, I don't need all that. I'm playing a video game. It's a fun video game. I don't need to be seduced into continuing to play this video game, and yet they always seem to think I do.
Yeah. If I was to mention, in number two, when you go to T'Challa?
You're on Black Panther still.
Yeah. T'Changa. There we go.
Right.
That's the home planet of the Krogan.
Mm-hmm.
You take Grunt there because he's having puberty
mm-hmm.
and needs to go through a rite of passage in order to not want to skull fuck everything to death, I guess.
Okay. You just need to take him to sex ed.
Basically.
But it's back home.
Yeah, it's a shooting sex ed. You go and kill monsters.
Oh, interesting.
And then he feels relieved.
That's such a video game thing. Like, let us turn this, you know, vulnerability of childhood into a thing that you can already do using the mechanics of this game. I think that's pretty funny.
and if number one, you didn't kill Rex, he's the fucking king.
Oh, cool.
And you're like, oh, hey, Rex! Mm-hmm. What's up?
Hey, Rex, I didn't know you were this important.
And then in a number of dialogue options and a number of different things are just easier. He's just like, yeah, I can't convince the, like, council of elder ladies and whatever to give you the stuff, but I'm gonna, like, skip over this 12-step program and here
sure.
you go.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, pull
here's your shot.
Strings for you.
And he helps you with Grunt, helps mm-hmm. him puberty, gives mm-hmm. him a clan to be a part of. It's good stuff. But yeah, back to number three. In number three, you have the original squad, basically, with the additions of James Vega and Edie.
Mm-hmm.
And you start off the game immediately with people being, there's some weird signals in the space. Mm-hmm. Are these the Reapers that the blah blah blah's talking about? It can't be.
Yeah.
And then you get summoned to a court meeting, a, like, naval court. You're like, hey, we need some information. You keep saying this. That's wild shit. Something is happening, though, and we need to have a plan. And you're mm-hmm. like, fuck you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can be a little more calm. But my response is always, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
You didn't believe me
the whole last game.
I said for two games that bad things are going to happen mm-hmm. and nothing.
I had to go solve everybody else's crimes while you were all dragging your feet. And now we get to solve the real ones?
Yep. And then as you're in the middle of your court, they're like, We still don't 100% believe, but something's come, and then the Reapers show up to Earth
mm-hmm.
and start murdering everyone.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, oh, mm-hmm. well, you were right.
Because
sorry.
You left your space gates open. Come on.
Yeah, come on.
What did you think
guys.
Was going to happen?
And you can go in, you can go right into battle. You join forces with this fella. His name is David Anderson, and he's basically like your old mentor from number one.
Mm-hmm.
In number one, at the end of it, you have the potential to save the original members of the council, the space
mm-hmm.
Supreme Court/presidents.
Mm-hmm.
And if you save them, you save them, and then you can put, you can get them to decide who do you put on the console with them.
Oh, okay.
You either Space Marine, who doesn't want to be a politician, mm-hmm. or a politician who really, really, really wants to be a higher up politician.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pick that guy.
Neither of those seem like great choices, to be honest. But yeah.
Well, Space Marine is like retired. I help with the new recruits and help them acclimate to the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pick him because he's a lot nicer, is right. a lot less power hungry.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, well, like one of the best things you could get done is nothing at that point.
Exactly.
Compared to more fucking secret space crimes.
Yeah, you also in number one have the option to not kill, to just let the space console die, and then you still get to pick who you put on the console in the next new console. Console. Why do I keep saying that wrong?
I don't know. Say it even wronger next time.
All right. Console.
Mm-hmm.
And, except apparently in the dialogue, it's like, by getting rid of the original console,
mm-hmm.
Humans are more in charge than they were before.
Hmm.
It doesn't really show up mechanically or in any other aspects of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I always saved them because it just seemed like a nice thing to do.
Was everyone ready for the really big council subplot payoff for number three? And that
I didn't really come up. But he's around. He's doing military things. Then war starts, and he's like, "Time to do military things."
Mm-hmm.
And instead of you fighting the guys, he's just like, "Hey, bud, we are gonna need a hell of a lot more people to fight space gods.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go get us the resources and, you know, allies we need by talking mm-hmm. to your alien like contacts?"
So literally, this is just like you going and saying, "Remember when I helped you for the past two games?"
Yep.
And they say, "Do a quest for us, right?"
Yep.
That's we're dealing
with. That's
the fucking
game.
Got it. Well,
this is why number three is going to be the shortest to talk.
Well, we have reason to team up with you, but also we need you to go and shoot people on a planet for a little while first. That's the gist. Got it.
So you go off, and there's like a resurgence of Prothean tech stuff that you get a few premonitions of. You learn some things. You talk to Liara, the, you know, space archaeologist, and find out that the evil human terrorist organization you were working for last game maybe has some information you might want, and it ends up being like a Prothean weapon that might be able to kill the Reapers, and then the quest becomes, all right, get allies, build the giant gun, kill the Reapers.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. And you go off.
Mm-hmm.
And at every turn, every time you're like, all right, gonna go get the Turians and get them to help. Ah, fuck, they're already invaded.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, hey, do you want to send us any help? And you're like, no.
Mm-hmm.
How about you help us fight off these Reapers, and then we'll help with whatever forces we are available to us, go fight the ones at your home planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do that every time.
Yep.
You go to a different planet, save them from their Reaper problem, have them send
mm-hmm.
some of their forces to fight your Reaper problem.
Yeah.
Which apparently is the source. Like, your Reaper problem is bigger than everyone else's. Everyone else has, like, one or two Reapers, your planet has, like, six.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they heard that, you know, like, Shepard was the one who fucked everything up back in number one or something.
Yeah. And, you go along, you collect, you know, information about, like, what is the super Prothean weapon, and, like, what does it have to do with this and that, and you find out you need to use a catalyst. What's the catalyst? Oh my gosh, it's the Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
The Citadel that the Protheans built years and years ago was to do a thing.
They just never got a chance to turn it on?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out none of that is true. The Mass Effect relays, the Citadel, it was all made by Reapers, and the Protheans had adopted the technology and converted it to become a weapon against the Reapers,
mm-hmm.
but never got a chance to use it.
Okay. And now you gotta.
But now you got a chance, mm-hmm. and you use it. And that's basically the gist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sorry to blast through number three. It's the least interesting.
That's what I heard, man. Like, this is like a famously, you know, disappointing finale. You know, kind of topical in that we're currently in the midst of the famously disappointing Game of Thrones finale when this is being recorded. Like, people are still just, like, salty about how that turned out. And others are like, you know, hey, there was no way that we're going to be able to make everything have exactly what you wanted to happen in the ending, because there's only a finite number of, you know, ways they can end a video game, even taking into account your, like, character's previous existence, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's weird, too, because the majority of this is spent with you on, you know, random planets, and you meet up with, like, old contacts. You do eventually meet up with all of your old members from your last game,
mm-hmm.
and you have a moment with each of them where you do a small mission, and Jack looks cooler than ever,
mm-hmm.
and Grunt is a little more red, and everyone's a little bigger, and it's whatever. It's fun, cool things, and all of their storylines get resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Jack is more of a calm and subdued woman in the sense of, I'm not going to murder everyone, and I'm helping children not be tortured like I was.
Right.
So, like...
Yeah, it seems appropriate. That was her whole deal to begin with. Yeah.
She went from rage monster to, like, I target my rage, mm-hmm. and then help people with it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and Jack 2.0.
Exactly. And, like, they'll have their little moments of resolution, but some of them are more important than the others. When you try and get the Krogans to join your war,
mm-hmm.
because the Turians were like, if you want us on your team, help us here. But I'm telling you, man, we're not really going to be able to help you unless you get the Krogans to help us, because there's no way we're going to win this war without the Krogans, so then you have to go find the Krogans, and then blah, blah,
sure,
blah.
Sure, blah, sure, blah. Sure, sure.
One of those.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to help the Krogans, they decide, all right, it's time to end this storyline. Without curing the Genophage, we cannot help you. We cannot make enough people to refill mm-hmm. our population during this war.
Right.
Without babies.
Yeah.
And then you join up with Morden. He doesn't ever join your team again, but he is a NPC that hangs out and helps create the final cure and administers it. And I tried consistently to get every game file just right to try and help him survive, but you can't save him.
Mm-hmm.
He sacrifices himself to cure the infertility.
I assume there's a fight happening, and that's why he sacrifices himself, not just like, the only way to do it is to... It's to stab the syringe through myself and then into the next guy with my really long syringe. So there's a battle-related circumstance. Got it.
Yeah. But everything's fixed. And, like, it wasn't, like, the most articulate ending to that storyline, but it was a storyline that had been building from game one.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the, like, the big history sort of payoffs.
It's one of the things that had the most, like, emotional investment before multiple characters. One of the things that had the most, like, impact on whether a character lived or died.
Mm-hmm.
It was impressive. And it had a big influence on Morden, despite him not being a Krogan or whatever. And I don't know. It was cool to see that come to something.
Mm-hmm.
The other big, finale was for the... for Tali and the Geth. If, for the majority of the game, the way you do it, if you help the Geth, you get them on your team. If you help the Koryans, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
You get them on your team, and the other person kind of
mm-hmm.
leaves forever.
Yeah, fucks off, yeah.
Tali just jumps off a fucking cliff.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy, that's, you know, you could, like, there's probably something else you could do, right?
Well, in her eyes, like, I really think this is cool. It's just like, you chose to help the people who, as far as she's concerned, genocided the majority of her race,
mm-hmm.
and send them off to space forever.
I'm always of the opinion that if you give birth to a child somehow and then they decide to kill you, you have to just let them. Like the younger one is the one I side with in all matters. That's just my instinctive way. Sorry, I, you know.
But if
you should have run more tests.
But if you go through number one and two and get just the right outcome, you can get them both
mm-hmm.
on your team.
Interesting.
And I did.
Okay.
I saved them both. They're both mm-hmm. alive. I think Legion dies technically. He joins the collective hive mind
mm-hmm.
to help become part of the war efforts.
Yeah. Do they all combine into a giant spaceship? Because that seems like it would be a really good idea.
I don't think so. Uh-huh. That is pretty great. But then you also have Tali on your team, and it's fun times.
Mm-hmm.
This was also a storyline that's been building and has had multiple conflicts throughout the different stories, and, like, this is where the game shines, is in these, like, resolutions of these characters' stories.
Mm-hmm.
The main story of Reapers are coming, it's just really lackluster.
Yeah.
Go to place, collect an ally, go to place, collect an ally, mm-hmm. who cares? Go to place and resolve a 3-game-long story arc that ends in characters loving, hating, or wanting to die.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's Mass Effect 3. It ends with you acquiring the Catalyst, connecting it to the Citadel, and finding out after a big, like, balls-to-the-wall fight where you get ripped to pieces and your armor falls off, that the Citadel Catalyst thing, some AI creature, just like, all right, in here you have kill the Reapers, become the Reapers, your choice, and that's the end of the game.
Interesting. They give you, like, does anything build towards become the Reapers? Like, do they even attempt to make that seem like a good idea now? Because, I am lost.
If you become the Reapers, it's just you gain control of them, and you, as Commander Shepard, are the lead hive mind of the Reapers.
Interesting. And you could then presumably have them, you know, go build schools or whatever.
Yeah, whatever you want.
Interesting.
The other option is you shoot them and anything artificial dies.
Oh, everything? Even the ones unrelated things?
I don't know, really. It doesn't really, make that too clear.
Mm-hmm. So that's the part that people don't like, right? I mean, that the actual, ending.
Yeah, everyone thinks it's really binary, and it's like, after so many choices and all this, does it come down to this?
Mm-hmm.
And, on one hand, I think the endings are kind of like, oh, that's it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm going to become a god.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
Not to jump on Remix territory, which is going to be completely different anyway. I wish it was just you connect the thing to the thing and then you die, and then who knows what happens after that. If the story doesn't end in the main character getting killed, you got to take your editor in there and fix it up.
No matter what you choose, you do die.
Cool.
Like whether if you destroy the thing, which you just shoot it, it explodes and you die.
Yeah.
Also destroys all the mass relays.
Mm-hmm.
If you take over the Reapers and whatever, you no longer have a body. You are now a Reaper God mind.
Yeah.
And there is a thing. There's a third ending that was released as DLC because people hated the ending so much that they made a third one.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. I really don't understand the backlash.
Ultimately, I'm not okay. You don't patch your things because of people complaining. If people are complaining, hey, it freezes at the title screen, then you patch your shit. You know, that's a functional matter.
Yeah.
But otherwise it's never going to be, nobody will be satisfied at that point. If you bend over, they're just let's see how much further we can get them to. You know, I'm not necessarily saying that is the conscious thought process that hyper fans of something have, but when you get way too far into something like that, you'll never be satisfied, even if the people are like, here, doesn't this not satisfy you? you both know it's not a genuine effort at that point. That tends to be how I think about these things. I don't know. Fuck you. Make your own.
Yeah, I agree completely. It seemed unnecessary to me. And, anyone who complained about, the ending is so binary or whatever, you can complain about the ending being kind of oh, that's it? Mm-hmm. You just kill them or make them go away? But, this entire game, from 1 to 3, has been the most, are you going to do the mean thing or the good thing?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no ambiguity.
Yeah, I mean,
This is on par.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems like something you would complain about since from the game one.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, the game, it's the ending of the game itself, the whole game, kind of whatever. But the ending of all the different character stories was substantial and emotional. And I genuinely loved
it. Yeah, you're a team pro...
Yeah.
The game as a game in general.
Yes.
Got it.
I would not have gone back to get the perfect ending that I need in order to get the Geth and Tali to like each other.
Sure.
If I didn't think this game was good enough to want me to create a universe in which they have the right world.
Right. Yeah. Because it's the character stuff. And then, the Reapers do not seem like characters in its sense where you would get as attached to that whole deal. Or even, Shepard is not, you're doing stuff because you want to see certain things, but Shepard's not a character who has emotions, so to speak, right?
No.
This in the same way as other people who are actually written. I mean, Shepard is written, but they write it so you can do... Oh, we're in Final Summations now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Shepard is written so that you can do anything, and as a result, can't really be a person, right?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah. There's no, woe is me, here's my life and backstory, let's get to be Shepard and learn about his feelings.
Exactly.
It's, hey, let's use Shepard as a, he has already, or she or whoever, has an established personality type, and it's either, a dick, or a saint.
Sure.
And you have to pick as you go.
Every other decision, man. Like, if I play those games, it's literally just going to be, I pick the one on the left, then the one on the right. And that's it. That's what I'm going to do, and we're going to see what happens.
But, like, because that's kind of, you know, up to you, and it doesn't mm-hmm. really have any weight on what his character is,
mm-hmm.
It lets you focus on the other characters and learning about them and having influence over them, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
That a game allows that. And yeah,
mm-hmm.
I do think that one was a little difficult to play sometimes, but without a doubt was the most fun to, like, spend hours in and find cool armor and just be a cool space guy. Number three had, without a doubt, the most resolved storylines that made me not tear up, but, mm-hmm. like, genuinely have an emotional response of, like, yes, I got it. These guys are safe. Everyone's happy. For the most part, we're still at war.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, three really just led to some good resolutions.
Mm-hmm.
Two was not a bad game, but it was definitely just, like,
mm-hmm.
the in-between.
Yeah. I like, just from hearing, you know, a broad overviews and, you know, reviews of this and that, two seems, like, the most interesting to me just because, you know, you're getting, like, more, like, very specific stories about the people who you are rolling with or whatever, you know what I'm saying? I don't know, it just seems like...
No, I like number two a lot. Like, the character stories are great.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that there's less of a build-up to them and less of a, like, long-standing resolution to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jack's story is found and resolved mostly in number two.
Sure.
And possibly a little more in number one. And number three, mm-hmm. you can find out where she is now.
Yeah.
But there's no, like... You finish her story number three. Her story's finished. You mm-hmm. just get to see where it is.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. I mean, I have absorbed the, you know, the being, the descriptions of this thing. And I'm like, you know, we'll probably try them at some point,
yeah.
like the individual ones at some point for the show or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. It seems almost too big to even start at this point compared to when it was just, oh, Mass Effect. Yeah, I'll go play Mass Effect. And then another one comes out and then you're like, I might as well play Mass Effect 2. But now it's like, hey, you want to play Mass Effect, motherfucker? Now you're going to play them all. And I'm like, oh, that's a 150-hour long game. It's one big-ass game.
No, dude, it's like a 300-hour game.
Yeah.
I'm surprised we fit it into mm-hmm. 2 hours. We're going so long. I'm so sorry.
No, that's fine. You know, sometimes shit be long. We went longer for Nier, which was but one game. Don't worry. We do things differently from since then. But, yeah, it's just like, what a behemoth of a thing to chew on that admittedly by all of its fans, regardless of how ardent they are, varies in quality heavily throughout the experience.
Yeah, throughout the same game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the kind of bigness that I'm just like, okay, you know, I know a Mass Effect expert. I can rely on that to get me through the rest of my life, and if I have to fake knowledge of Mass Effect, well, now I don't have to. I have some knowledge of Mass Effect.
Also, any hardcore Mass Effectors out there, I haven't played in a long time. Sorry if I forgot shit.
Oh, yeah, I don't... I have a hard time believing anyone has a perfect encyclopedic knowledge of all of these things that happen here and there. I am very drawn to all of the, like... layers and layers of history stuff that sort of gets peeled back. Like, that's always very appealing to me. And, like, knowing the types of games these creators have made in the past, like, I'm a big fan of the Baldur's Gate stuff. I played them when I was very, very young on, like, on older cousins' consoles, and then I'm, like, now getting back into them. But that seems to be, like, a specialty they've retained of just, like, the extremely thick, fleshed outedness of the background details and stuff. Mm-hmm.
It's what made number one, to me, the superior of the three. It mm-hmm. had the most, hey, here's the world.
Yeah.
Which, it makes sense. Like, it's number one. Of course, mm-hmm. they're going to have the most of that. But number two and three, they had their moments of expansion of, like, the lore and, like, the universe and the politics even. But mm-hmm. number one, really, you lived in it. You like, walked around in it, met random strangers, and, like, asked them about their culture. Mm-hmm. And it was cool.
Yeah. And the part where you're an underdog. Like, I tend to... much prefer a game experience where my character remains, like, kind of a shit-on, you know, fucker. Not necessarily that characters in the universe don't like me, but just I like to stay as someone small. And, you know, that's not always the case. Like, it's fun to get big, but also, like, the story initially where it's just like, oh, we're stranded here, like, we're really screwed over, we need to, like, get back to a starting position, and not rather than getting to be the biggest guy in the whole universe, is just more appealing to me from having been described to me than, like, the Mass Effect 3 going around and everyone's like, hey, it's Shepard, I know you, we're best buddies, probably.
Yeah. No, number one, definitely had a good balance of, like, people are like, ah, you did some cool shit in the military, like, respect for you and, like, your skills, but definitely think, like, you're just a guy.
Yeah.
And then by number three, it's like, oh, you're fucking Shepard.
Yeah. The celebrity treatment. That is all the final summation I am qualified to express is just, like, you know, yeah, I'm interested, but also, like, oh, what a behemoth. You know, Eventually we'll get into, let me tell you about Persona 5, and then that's, like, my big, you know, fucking time investment, so.
Great, I'm in it. My last words for this is, it's an incredibly rich world, and I am a big fan of this franchise. Even parts of it that people dislike, I find some amount of, like, I don't know, appeal in it.
Mm-hmm.
The ending of number three was not the best, but it's something that made sense based on, like, how that game had been going from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
The characters are all written in a way that makes them feel real, and I'm really am glad that I got to play it. I would even go back now and play it, potentially, if I had a quick and easy way to get all three games on a single console.
Yeah.
But it's a game that has been important to me for, like, a good long time. It was the game that I first started investing a obnoxious amount of time in before getting into more games in general.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's that.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, the here's the thing you've been hearing about your whole time, listener, unless you're listening with intimate Mass Effect knowledge, but otherwise it's like, yeah, seems worth it.
Definitely,
great.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like a fine time. You know, if you have the time.
If you have
the
time.
Which is the big hook there.
Yeah, if you can make it through 1, 2, and 3, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you can, because it's worth it in the end, but might be kind of rough.
Yep.
All right, this has been great. I'm so tired of talking. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we learned a lot. We don't have to learn any more things, I think. You know, what did we learn? We learned about all of that.
We learned I'm going to bed.
That's fine with me. Yeah, all right. We're going to get the hell out of here. So thank you for joining us, listeners. Catch you next time. What the hell ever. See ya.
Bye.